From Lock Haven to Philadelphia, Saxonburg to Shamokin, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, lawmakers have passed the remainder of the 2020-2021 state budget. There will be no tax hikes nor any additional borrowing. David Taylor and Rebecca Euler are joined by State Senator Kristen Phillips Hill for a Capitol Watch look at how they did it. And aside from the presidential race, Republicans in Pennsylvania had a very good election day this year, and the winner's circle has a diverse look. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. The Allegheny Institute for Public Policy in Pittsburgh has conducted a study of gaming revenues and found, like most industries, it has taken a big hit due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Casinos were closed for 2 full months and 2 partial months last spring. However, due to supplemental unemployment compensation provided by the federal government and the fact few entertainment options were available, industry revenues rebounded considerably in the third quarter of the year. Still, nationwide data points to an overall revenue decline in the range of 20 to 40% for 2020. Since gambling is discretionary spending, the report also indicates a full recovery will be slow in coming. The Center Square reports that Pennsylvania ranks 20th highest in per capita spending on funding for law enforcement agencies among the 50 states. The last year for which complete data is available is 2018, and Pennsylvania state and local spending on police protection totaled $7.7 billion, or about $605 per person. The number of municipalities that depend on the Pennsylvania State Police Force Service has increased from 1,266 municipalities in 2013 to 1,297 in 2020. Tolls may be coming to a bridge near you. The Pennsylvania Department of Transportation is considering the implementation of private-public partnerships to upgrade or replace a number of major bridges in the state, and that would include adding tolls to the structures. Despite a massive increase in funding just a few years ago that resulted in a 30-cent per gallon increase in gasoline prices, PennDOT claims it does not have enough existing revenue to upgrade the bridges. However, the process of implementing the funding scheme will take several years. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Last June, the legislature enacted only a partial 2020-2021 budget as lawmakers faced an uncertain revenue picture due to the COVID-19 pandemic. As the current session of the General Assembly drew to a close last week, they passed the remainder of the fiscal year budget. Here with details on the new spending plan are our Capitol Watch crew, David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, and Rebecca Euler from the National Federation of Independent Business. They are joined by State Senator Kristen Phillips Hill of York County. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, Rebecca Euler, Legislative Director for the National Federation of Independent Business. Rebecca, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you. Wonderful to be back here again, David. Thanks. Well,
it is. It's great to be together. We've got a whole cornucopia of stuff that happened in the state capitol to report. And even better, we have an all-star special guest, our friend, State Senator Kristen Phillips Hill from York County. Senator, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, Dave. It's really great to join you and Loman and Rebecca for this great discussion.
So I guess we need to start with the most prominent business that was undertaken, which was completing the rest of the state budget. That the budget that was passed in the spring was only for a certain period of time, and that we had to get her done for the remainder of the fiscal year. Senator, how did all that play out?
Well, I think it was very challenging, and I think that the challenge with any state budget, of course, is balancing the needs and wants every year, but really especially this year. And Pennsylvania faced the most restrictive economic shutdown in the nation, and we had the second highest number of unemployment claims in the entire nation. We were only behind California, despite not being the second most populous state.
Right, yeah, we're fifth.
We had weeks of no real estate sales, no car sales, small businesses being shut down, you name it. And the legislature made a concerted effort to address the challenges of the people of Pennsylvania by delaying our tax filing deadline to July 15th. And when we did that, we passed a five-month budget to allow that first wave of the pandemic to recede so that we could see a fuller economic outlook for the remainder of this fiscal year. And, of course, people need to keep in mind that we run July 1 through June 30th.
Yes.
So the legislature approved a spending plan that, going back to my original point, balanced the needs over the wants for the remaining 7 months of this fiscal year. And was it perfect? No. Was it great? No. But we are obligated to balance our budget, and we cannot spend what we do not have. And I look at the budget, and if I cannot see a better alternative, I'm going to support it. And with this budget, there was no better alternative. And had the Senate moved forward with a full budget in May or June without knowing the full impact of this virus on our economy, we risked creating an extraordinary budget deficit that could have resulted in reduced services and higher taxes for years to come. So while the passage of the budget is completed, my primary focus must be to continue rebuilding Pennsylvania
Yes.
and our economy in the wake of COVID-19 and the governor's unilateral and most restrictive in the nation economic shutdown. So that's sort of where we are.
Yes, I mean, that's absolutely right. And that, and Senator, I wanted to pivot to talk about one of the other really important things that happened during these legislative days. You know, of course, as you mentioned, with the governor's very broad and enduring lockdown order, that many businesses have been suffocated, and that you've got businesses that have gone bankrupt, that they've decided to close their doors forever. We need to, and this is the point, I know Rebecca's heard me say this so many times, insofar as businesses can operate safely, we need them to be open now. That ultimately there's no substitute for the stream of income that businesses get from satisfying customers. And, you know, as you mentioned, Senator, that, you know, Harrisburg is not Washington, D.C. You folks can't just run the printing press and create money. And of course, there are great dangers with deeper indebtedness. We need these businesses to be open. And one of the dangers, one of the factors that goes into the decision making by business owners is the threat of lawsuits, and that the litigation industry in Pennsylvania, which is very powerful, views the pandemic as being a business opportunity. And that's why NFIB Pennsylvania and PMA and the healthcare community, the education community, agriculture, not-for-profits, that dozens of statewide organizations endorsed your effort to create temporary safe harbor liability protections for the pandemic. Could you talk about that effort, please?
Yeah, you know, absolutely. And this was a joint effort. Senator Lisa Baker, Senator Michelle Brooks, Senator Pat Stefano, myself, recognizing these great challenges. I served as a school board director before becoming a legislator, and I was hearing from superintendents and school boards about the great concerns that they faced. Following all the rules put forward by the Centers for Disease Control, by the Secretary of the Department of Health here in Pennsylvania, and still being threatened with litigation, despite following all of the rules. And when that happens, what I can tell you is that's money that's going to go straight out of the classroom and into paying lawyers' fees and settlements that aren't going to benefit anyone.
Yes.
So providing that protection was really important. And, you know, I also chair the bipartisan bicameral YMCA caucus. This is important for our nonprofits. Our nonprofits have stepped up. You know, going back to businesses were shuttered. People were out of work.
Yes.
The unemployment compensation system wasn't working the way it was supposed to work. And these nonprofits really, really stepped up to care for people in the community, providing food to people who were hungry. The YMCA is renowned for its high-quality child care for people who were in crisis situations. Schools were closed, but parents can't work if they don't have a safe place.
That's correct.
Children.
That's correct.
You know, so it was important for them as well. And we had an opportunity with a piece of House legislation that was in the Senate to amend this language into it and send it back over to the House for their concurrence and on to the governor's desk. And we really are hopeful that the governor will see fit to sign it into law and provide this type of protection from litigation. We're not talking about taking away the ability to sue for gross negligence or something that is just
Of course not.
Right? But, you know, trying to end lawsuits that are predatory against entities that have done everything possible to protect the public in our greatest hour of need is really what it's focused on.
I think you're exactly right on that, Senator. And this is one of my frustrations. I think we have to have a bigger conversation here in the state about how do we bring our economy back. And I think this liability bill, this liability language that passed is exactly one of the things that has to be done. Because as you know, small businesses, one lawsuit, just one, even a threat of a lawsuit can put a small business out of business. So these this fear of lawsuits is actually hindering those businesses from bringing their employees back, from investing in their business, from really getting revved up and started again. And like you said, nonprofits as well. If they can't open the childcare center, the parents can't go back to work.
We need to get Pennsylvania back on track. And even as we absolutely have to deal with the pandemic as the very serious public health crisis that it is, we also need the rest of our lives to continue. And that a strategy of total harm minimization has to include being able to go back to work, getting the economy functioning again, because, you know, Senator, as you understand well, the more bankruptcies and business closures that we have now, the deeper the budgetary hole is going to be in Harrisburg next year.
Absolutely. You know, we just celebrated Thanksgiving. If you're listening on Saturday, it's Small Business Saturday, and it's a great opportunity to get out and patronize local businesses. And remember, these are your friends and your neighbors. These are the people who sponsor those little league teams, contribute to local charities, who, for every dollar that they earn, the majority of that stays right in your local community. And, you know, Christmas and Hanukkah will be upon us before we know it. It's a great opportunity this weekend to get out and support them, the people who've been supporting us for so many years.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Senator.
Well, amen to that, Senator. And you're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers, Rebecca Euler from NFIB Pennsylvania, and our special guest, State Senator Kristen Phillips Hill.
Senator, one of the other things I wanted to ask you about, and as we're talking about things we need to do to turn Pennsylvania around, you have been a big proponent of regulatory reform throughout your time in the legislature. And I know you had sponsored several of the bills that would have provided a lot of regulatory reform initiatives across the board. Now, those sort of made some progress this session, but we didn't get them over the finish line. What do you think the prospects for those are next year as we really take on this recovery?
Well, Rebecca, first I will say this. My mother used to say to me, when I was a young girl, she would say, you know, if you keep everlastingly at it, eventually you will have success.
Yeah.
And, you know, if there is a silver lining to this pandemic, in terms of advancing the cause of regulatory reform, we have seen that many regulations at both the state and federal level have been rescinded to help get us through these challenging times.
Yeah.
And so we are in the perfect position at this point to look at what has been rescinded, to look at the impact of rescinding those regulations, and if they don't make sense, get rid of them. Certainly, I have legislation that I introduced a couple years ago, still working to get it over the finish line, that was called the Office of the Repealer, that would take a systematic look at the over 153,000 regulations on the books here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania and make those kinds of decisions. Do they make sense? Do they work? Are they necessary? Are they outdated, antiquated, duplicative? Get rid of what doesn't work.
But one of the great failings of government is that nobody goes back and reviews, you know, did things work the way we meant them to? Did they work but had other effects that were not good? The things that were enacted, did they actually solve the problem to the point where the restrictions or the guidelines are no longer necessary?
I likened it to spring cleaning, right?
Yes, yes.
If you didn't, on occasion, clean out your closet, you'd never be able to get anything in them. And, you know, I was able to help my successor in the House, Representative Mike Jones, get a bill across the finish line that I had worked on prior to his tenure there that eliminated outdated provisions in the school code. And there were several pages of provisions, including one that said a school district of the fourth class can purchase a home for the superintendent, an educator, or a custodian.
Oh, my.
Now, when you tell people that, they go, are you kidding me, right? But this was a provision that was probably put into the code when school districts of the fourth class were very rural, and it was very difficult to recruit people to come out there, and they were enticing them.
We're capable of undergoing this kind of review. It shouldn't be thought of as an impossible thing. We're able to pass laws. We're able to govern ourselves. We should equally be able to go back and review, whether the rules and regulations enacted in the recent past or the distant past are still relevant to our society today.
Getting this budget done this year was an important step, and thank you for holding the line on taxes and borrowing. No big spending and borrowing in this budget, but I think it does kind of set up a really difficult budget discussion next year. So where do you think, we might go next year as we discuss, closing some of these budget holes that we know will probably still be there? And I'll answer part of my question myself. I think growing the economy and getting back to work is part of that. But is there anything else we need to sort of watch out for? Anything that we should be on alert for next year's budget?
About $3.8 billion is non-recurring revenue in this budget. So that's a concern because we're going to have to go back and figure out that revenue gap next year. Growing the economy is absolutely essential. We have to protect people's lives, and we have to protect people's livelihoods. And we are not going to be able to economically sustain another restrictive shutdown like we had this past year.
Yeah, absolutely true.
We will not be able to come through it again. And the problem is that how do you fill that revenue gap when the economy's not booming, when people aren't working? When people aren't working, they're not receiving income, which means they're not paying income tax. They're not out purchasing goods and services, so they're not paying sales tax. And to ask the people who are, who have nothing to give more, it's just not plausible. So we are going to have to rebuild the economy. We need that economic activity to generate that revenue to pay for the essential services that people of this Commonwealth demand. And we are going to have to be very mindful of how we spend our government dollars. That's something I've always been very concerned about, always sought to stretch those taxpayer dollars as far as we possibly can. We're going to have to lean things down.
Well, and also, hopefully it'll create an opportunity for innovative thinking. And, even as you have the lieutenant governor and others, looking to bring into being a new industry, marijuana, for the purpose of making revenue, well, I would say, well, instead of trying to create something new, why don't we just take, what we have with the Liquor Control Board and the state liquor monopoly, we could just sell that off. that would help to balance the budget. And, you know, I know that there are a lot of political obstacles to that, or have been for, you know, for many decades. But, you know, when a time of true need comes, you'd think that that would be an option that would then become plausible.
I completely agree with you. I've been supportive of getting our government out of the liquor business since I arrived in Harrisburg. And the challenge, of course, with recreational marijuana is I just have these memories of my time here in Pennsylvania as an average citizen and,
yes.
and the promise that was made with gambling that
yes.
it was going to fix mm-hmm. our property
yeah.
tax.
Yeah. Yes.
And I
that
say to people,
so well.
How did that work out for you? Because
yes.
I see what my tax bill looks like, and it didn't work out so great for me.
Yes,
so,
yes.
So, you know, I don't want to make promises to people that I can't keep. And I truly believe that gambling to fix our property tax challenges was a promise that was made and a promise that was broken. So I don't think that recreational marijuana is going to be our financial salvation.
No, and that's a whole other... That's a
wealth and could
yeah.
portend greater problems in other ways in the future.
And that's where I was going, but that's a whole other show.
Another 20-plus minutes.
Well, Senator, it's been so wonderful to be with you. We're down to the last of the moments that we have here. Where can the listeners go to learn more about you and your office and the work that you're doing?
Very easy to find. You can just go online to Senator Kristen, and that's senatorkristin.com. And there's a link there. You can send me emails. You can find me on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram, and love to hear from folks.
Outstanding.
It really helps me do my job.
The one and only Senator Kristen Phillips Hill, thank you so much. Rebecca, where can the listeners go to find out more about you and NFIB?
We are at nfib.com/PA or on Facebook or Twitter.
Outstanding. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on Sunday mornings at 8:30 on the Pennsylvania Cable Network with PMA Perspective. For Rebecca and me, thanks again to Senator Kristen Phillips Hill, and thanks to all of you for listening. We'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. The presidential election aside, one of the striking outcomes of the 2020 general election was the utter and complete failure of Democrats to make gains in either Congress or in the various state legislatures. After deploying vastly superior financial resources, Democrats have, to date, failed to secure a U.S. Senate majority, lost at least 12 seats in Congress, and failed to flip control of a single state legislative body. Democrats enjoyed a target-rich environment in their bid to gain control of the U.S. Senate. Despite the GOP having to defend twice as many seats, Democrats currently have a net gain of just one seat. Control of the chamber hinges on a January 5th runoff in Georgia, which will determine who will win two seats currently held by GOP incumbents. Democrats need to win both to plunge the Senate into a 50-50 tie, with the majority then being determined by Vice President-elect Kamala Harris. The losses incurred by Democrats in the U.S. House of Representatives were historic. Not since 1892 has either party gained that many seats while losing the presidency. The narrow six-seat majority will be difficult for Speaker Nancy Pelosi to control, given that moderate Democrats are already at war with their far-left comrades, whom they blame for the party's electoral losses. In a bid to impact next year's congressional redistricting process, a vast network of left-wing groups were active in an effort to flip control of state legislatures, pouring hundreds of millions of dollars into races across the nation. Control of not even one state legislative chamber flipped into Democrat hands, while two chambers actually flipped to the GOP. The Republican electoral success is obvious, but less noticeable and even more important is the diversity of the GOP victors. Diversity is a term most often associated with the left. That is because the left is captive of identity politics, believing such factors as gender or race are more important than, say, actual qualifications or ability to do the job. That is why Joe Biden early on promised to put a woman on the ticket and then selected a person of color, even though her ability to actually serve competently in the position is questionable. Republicans, however, prefer to promote candidates based on merit, their actual ability to do the job. Yet, resulting from this focus on ability and qualifications, the GOP has emerged as a party of true diversity. Gains in the U.S. House of Representatives resulted from the election of a record number of women. Here in Pennsylvania, the GOP elected a state treasurer and auditor general at the same time since 1956. Auditor General-elect Timothy DeFore is the first person of color from either party to be elected to a non-judicial statewide office, and a woman, Stacey Garrity, is now state treasurer-elect. This follows an off-year statewide judicial election cycle in which the GOP unexpectedly won a seat on the Superior Court with the election of Megan McCarthy King. One of two seats on the state Supreme Court, by the way, is held by a woman, Justice Sally Mundy. The GOP's empowerment of qualified women continued with the recent reorganization of state Senate leadership. The retirement of Senate President pro tempore Joseph Scarnati resulted in the elevation of Majority Leader Jake Corman to the chamber's top spot. Replacing Corman is State Senator Kim Ward of Westmoreland County, who became the first woman to hold the top party leadership post in that chamber. None of this was by design. There was no grand plan to promote women and minorities within the party. There was, however, an effort to provide a level playing field. All of the above were elected in competitive races and prevailed because they were both qualified and succeeded in navigating their respective electoral processes. There is an old saying that success breeds success. Women and minorities across the Commonwealth, indeed across the nation, can look at what has transpired in 2020 and be encouraged to pursue their own ambitions. And while they will not be helped up that ladder by artificial quotas or professions of woke diversity, they now have real-life role models who have broken the barriers of race and gender, and they did so because they were the best person for the job. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 25 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WKVE-FM in Mount Pleasant, WKFB-AM in Jeanette, along with WKHB-FM in Irwin, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the cost of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.